Good morning, members of the court. My name is Glenn Reynolds. I'm here on behalf of one arm of the Menominee Tribe, called Menominee Tribal Enterprises, to request the court to make a finding that OSHA, because of the history of the tribe, because of the jurisprudence of this court, that OSHA does not apply to the operation of a sawmill. The Menominee, as is pointed out in the briefs and recognized by other decisions of this court, has been in Wisconsin for over 5,000 years.
Let me just sort of cut to the chase here,
sure.
Because we know that about the Menominee, and yet there's also this Supreme Court decision in the Tuscarora Indian Nation case that sets out the general proposition that a general statute, which I would view the Occupational Health and Safety Act certainly is, applies to all persons, including Indians and their property interests, is what it says. And then there are a few exceptions, but I don't see any language in the various legal documents that define the Menominee similar to those in, say, the Nevada case where there's language about federal agents can't come on the land. It seems to me the default rule is that general statutes like this apply, and I would be interested in your focusing on why it shouldn't here.
Well, here's why it shouldn't apply. Number one, I think we have to keep in mind that Tuscarora was pertaining to taking land for a dam. It's been applied to OSHA.
Well, yeah.
But does it, I think this court's decision in Great Lakes recognizes that, you know, OSHA is a statute of general applicability to private industry. It does not apply to states. It does not apply to the federal government. And my question is, why should it apply to a tribal government?
Well, let me throw out something from left field. There are areas of the law, and I'm thinking in particular of environmental regulations, where the statutes and regulations actually formally provide for treating Native American groups as states, treatment as state status. And I don't see that under the occupational health regime, the OSHA regime. And it seems to me that suggests that when Congress wants that kind of carve-out, it can create it, but I don't think it did so here.
It did not, and its silence, I think, raises the question about, like in the Great Lakes case, I think, Judge Posner, that was your decision. Were they really thinking of tribes at the time they enacted OSHA? And I would say probably not. And if they didn't put tribes in there, then why should we assume that tribes, as governments, protecting their people with their own safety standards, should automatically have the incursion of the federal government basically coming in and fining them for doing the work that they're doing? There are principles of
Well, it's not exactly a tribe, though, isn't it? This tribal enterprise, it's a company that's separate. It's not tribal government. It's not, you know, policing and that kind of thing.
But it is
separated as a manufacturing enterprise.
It actually is a tribal government, and this is the issue that the lower ALG did not understand. He thought it was a Wisconsin corporation, and it is not even a tribal corporation. An underling such as Coeur d'Alene in the other cases. It is actually a separate branch of government. And here's why that is. In your prior cases, you've recognized the rights of tribal people to be able to gather wild rice and hunt and fish and protect their water, like the Sagagan case. In this case, the Menominee were forced to live in a forest. And the forest could not be consumed. It had to be converted to lumber for it to be sold so that the people could survive.
Well, could I, again, I mean, I think you're raising in some ways a very big question, which is what's the default status of tribes under U.S. law, but there we have to deal ourselves, and maybe even what should it be, but there's the Tuscarora case for one thing, but then there's also I think the fact that there is no equivalent statute about tribes to, say, the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, where we have a sequence of inquiries that we go through, and if a foreign sovereign, whether it's an entity like this MTE that we're looking at here, whatever it may be, the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act kind of tells us how to work through that and what's a commercial activity. But we don't have one for Indian tribes at this point in time. So we're left to default back to this, as you well know, very complex back and forth system that our country has gone through. And sometimes, you know, tribal entities do have treatment as though they really are actually almost foreign governments, and sometimes they're part of the state, sometimes they're like a state, sometimes they're subject to regulation. We have to figure out which one of those applies here. And I'm just concerned that I can't find any language like the Navajo case or anything that would suggest, and I'm not sure that you've exhausted your remedies on some of the theories that you might have had.
Well, Judge, those are excellent questions. Navajo was on one issue, the power to exclude. Marion recognizes that the Menominee have the power to exclude by virtue of the reservation.
Well, but not quite. I mean, it's very specific language in Navajo. You can keep out federal agents. And as you know, there are statutes that deal with criminal prosecutions on tribal land. There are statutes. I mean, there is no general background rule that says federal agents can't walk onto tribal land.
That's true. But what we have here is one of the most unique tribes in the United States. It is the only community that has survived with its forest for all these years. And the forest has enabled it to feed itself.
But so why is that legally significant?
Because it's just like the Ojibwe gathering. Because if the federal government, which is promised in restoration, to have no authority at all, that was a promise and a commitment by the U.S. Congress in the Restoration Act and in the plan that was sanctioned by the Restoration Act. And in the Treaty of the Wolf River, they said in 1856, if things don't work out on the reservation, this is a commitment by treaty, we are going to find a solution for you, because they knew the Menominee were being put in a forest where there was no food. They starved. The sawmill was their sanction. The sawmill enabled them as a tribal government to gain sufficient access to funds to sustain themselves. And every fine that OSHA levels on these people comes out of the mouths and the bread on the table.
Let me ask you a question. I'm just curious. Is there something about the way the tribe operates this sawmill that, or the way tribes in general engage in manufacturing or other commercial activities, that somehow OSHA wouldn't fit? That OSHA's regulations really aren't designed for safety problems in Indian enterprises, or?
You know, Judge, I think this...
Sawmills are very dangerous, right?
They are, and Menominee takes its safety very seriously. They have their own safety codes, and I could ask the court to take judicial...
I'm not questioning that, but I'm just wondering whether there's something about the difference between Indian enterprise... I'm not talking about legal difference, but a physical difference, Indian enterprise and a regular commercial enterprise, that makes OSHA just not fit well.
It doesn't fit well with principles of comity. And
that I understand, but
it's just a sawmill. It's not some traditional way of fishing or whatever. Right. I mean, there are sometimes that.
Right. That's correct, and I think this case provides this court an opportunity to recognize that OSHA does have a role in consulting on a government-to-government basis, but not executing search warrants and imposing fines, which could be huge. I mean, $7,000 per violation. One of the violations is no training on bloodborne pathogens control plan. Not that that's not significant.
Look, every company subject to OSHA has their beefs with some of these regulations, and I think companies would equally say if they have to pay OSHA fines or if they've got to invest in preventive measures, that's so much money they can't devote to the bottom line. And, you know, it's just the way it is. It's a cost of safety.
But here's the thing that is hard to reckon with. This is not a for-profit company. This is not a company that watches the bottom line and maybe takes risks on behalf of workers.
I understand that. There are a lot of not-for-profit hospitals that are subject to OSHA, too.
This is an indigenous organization that has rights of self-determination and that every time OSHA comes in and fines them, it takes away funds that would be otherwise used for the tribal people.
Because which might be a great policy argument, but unfortunately we are dealing with whatever the law may be, and there are these three exceptions. Does the law touch on exclusive rights of self-governance and purely intramural matters? Well, this sawmill operates in interstate commerce. The application of the law to the tribes to abrogate rights under the treaties. Well, you've made a treaty-based argument, so we'll certainly think about that. Or whether there's some proof that Congress intended not to have this law apply. And I don't see any of that. Not sure you argued that anyway.
Well, it's true, Judge Wood, that when they put OSHA together, they didn't say Indians are included or not, but they did make a big statement about government. Federal government, except the postal office, post office and state government, are not applicable to OSHA. And they didn't mention tribes, but within a few years,
what
Congress,
exactly is the government language about state governments?
It's excluded.
I understand that.
Okay.
In a few states, there are state-owned enterprises, cement plants, for example. And I'm interested in knowing whether the language that exempts states exempts, maybe I'll ask your opponent this, exempts only the governmental activities of states, or whether it means if the state of North Dakota decides to run a cement plant, that's exempt also from OSHA.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about the policy in OSHA is that it says, states, you're exempt, but we're going to work with you. We're going to fund grants and proposals so that the states and the federal government will be on the same page. That's the point I'm making here. OSHA is welcome to come to Menominee and make recommendations. And, in fact, all the criticisms
about the this management plan, this was something that was actually, it was like the federal rule that was subject to a congressional veto, is that correct?
It was essentially a method that Congress set up in order to restore Menominee.
But it was put before Congress in some form.
Yes, it was.
And, of course, the Restoration Act, that was. Now, but is there any language in the Restoration Act or the management plan that would, you know, fit within the Tuscarora framework of suggesting congressional intent to exempt the sawmill?
Absolutely.
So what would that
two words, Judge, no authority. The federal government shall have no authority with respect to the operation of the mill.
But I thought there was also, actually, I'm not sure you've preserved this argument, but Section 4E of the management plan gives MTE the power, and I'm quoting, to make and amend reasonable rules and regulations concerning the use of the subject property, close quote. That sounds to me like it's much closer to what you're arguing about than no authority. I mean, of course, the federal government's not going to run the sawmill business. The federal government doesn't run Abbott Labs either, or Boeing, but it does have the authority to regulate.
Yes, well, to me, Judge, it says no authority. Congress passed that. This was this is a tribe that has no 280 jurisdiction. That's pretty unusual. It has no non-Indians living on the reservation. That's not even an issue in this case. It has used the forest as no other tribe has, like the Navajo. This is a very, very similar case to the Navajo, and much broader than just the power to exclude, which is now interpreted on Marion under the Supreme Court rule in Marion to be just as powerful as if it were written into the treaty. It has, this is the primary method for the tribe to sustain itself. It takes safety very seriously, but every fine that OSHA imposes on it takes away the funds that are distributed to the tribal members.
4E, 4F, to make and amend reasonable rules and regulations concerning the use of subject property. So there is, there's something. But on the other hand, it isn't a statute or a treaty.
No, but I think it has the force of a statute, and it has the implication of being created by the treaty because of the promise made in 1856. This is a congressional act. The Secretary of Interior wasn't basically promising something Congress wasn't backing up. Now, I know that's the argument, but this is why Indian people are so frustrated dealing with the federal government. Federal government says, we're not going to have any authority over you. And then someone, clever legal argument, says, well, that wasn't a statute. So, in fact, we are. We said we're not going to have any authority. We're going to allow you self-determination, but now we're going to come in and fine you because we think you should do it our way and not do it your way.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Adams.
I'd like to reserve
Mr.
a little time if I could. Thank you, Judge.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Mark Lerner, and I represent the Secretary of Labor in this proceeding. Petitioner Menominee Tribal Enterprises, MTE, manages a forest and sawmill operated by the Menominee Tribe in Neopit, Wisconsin, United States. The basic question in this case is whether a law of the United States, the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970, the OSH Act, applies to MTE. The Secretary.
And so why don't you address this management plan and the language approved by the Secretary of the Interior that gives to MTE the power to make and amend reasonable rules and regulations concerning the use of the property?
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems to me that no one is saying should there be safety rules, but the question is who gets to make them, and as you, I'm sure, are well aware, the status of Indian tribes is unique in our system. It's not the same as states. It's not the same as another foreign government. It is just what it is. They are sovereign in some respects, and we've recognized that since Chief Justice John Marshall.
Your Honor, we would say that provision does not deflect from our argument that OSHA, that the OSH Act applies.
Why? With the reservation that your opponent was talking about.
Yeah. The purpose of the management plan was to continue the practice that the Menominees would run as a business their own facility. OSHA doesn't manage. We're not managers. We don't go in and manage companies. Unlike the federal prison industries, that is a government managed business. We're regulators, like the cop on the beat or health inspectors. And
the question here is who gets to regulate, and when the word regulation is used.
The fact that MTE can have its own regulations doesn't mean that OSHA doesn't apply. For example, in Mashantucket Sand and Gravel.
Well, that's just a circular argument.
Right. The Second Circuit said that, well, yes, the tribe could have a set of safety regulations, and we would welcome that. We welcome any employer having its own safety manual as long as it's as good as the OSHA standards. But the fact that the tribe can have safety regulations does not mean that the OSH Act doesn't apply.
What's your response to Mr. Reynolds' argument that OSHA exempts state and federal governments, and tribal governments are like state or even like federal governments? So why wouldn't that be fully appropriate?
Your Honor, the OSH Act expressly exempts state and local governments. States may
local
adopt
plans.
Too? What? Yes.
Local governments?
And yes, local governments.
Yeah, it says an employer is defined. This is 651B3 and so on. And 652.5, it's page 4 of your brief. It's an employer is defined as a person engaged in a business affecting commerce who has employees but does not include the United States except the U.S. Postal Service or any state or political subdivision of a state. So that sounds very comprehensive to me. It sounds like the cement plant isn't under OSHA.
Exactly.
If it's state-owned.
If it's run by state governments, of course it is.
Do a lot of, obviously, are engaged in a great deal of dangerous activity. Garbage company. Yes, there are local utility companies. And
What I would say to that is that Indian tribes are unique aggregations of of people. The Supreme Court said in White Mountain Apache versus Bracker that they're not states.
Why is this any different from this? What's this town in Wisconsin where?
Neopit.
What?
Neopit.
Neopit.
Yeah.
Well, what if Neopit owned the sawmill? Would it be exempt from OSHA?
Yes, it would be under the OSHAC. But in ERISA, for example, ERISA also excludes state and local governments, and yet this court in the Smart case said that ERISA applied to a tribe. The Retirement Act. The Congress chose, because of federalism, to exempt state and local governments. It did provide a mechanism for states.
It's odd because Indian. For many purposes, aren't the Indian reservations treated like states?
There may be other statutes in which I think the Safe Drinking Water Act, I think they're specifically mentioned there. And I think there may be some environmental laws where they can have what we call plans. We have state plans under OSHA, but they're only for states, you know, the states of the union and listed territories. There are some, but Congress did not choose to treat the tribes that way. It did not.
Did this issue arise, to your knowledge, when Congress was considering enacting OSHA?
There is no legislative history of the OSHAC where it was, Indians were discussed.
But the year is what? It's more or less contemporaneous with the Clean Water Act and some of these other acts where there is treatment of state facilities.
Yes, yeah.
Now, the Management Act, the Management Agreement, isn't that a lot like a treaty or a statute?
No, Your Honor.
I mean, the federal rules are a lot like statutes, aren't they?
The management plan is an agreement between the tribe and the Secretary of the Interior. A treaty is a document that
Why
is
it given to Congress to the veto power?
Well,
it's
a document. Nothing happened. I mean, it was presented to the Congress.
Well, I understand that, but there must have been some thinking behind why you would present it to this agreement between Secretary of the Interior and an Indian tribe. Agreements between the Secretary of the Interior and Indian tribes put before Congress?
The Congress decided to do that. It turns out, though, that those types of provisions were later struck down by the Supreme Court in a case called Chadha.
We know about the one-house vetoes and so on, but let me tell you that the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure still go and sit before Congress, before two houses. The problem in Chadha was that it was a one-house veto, and that wasn't seen to be consistent with the constitutional structure.
The fact, though, is that nothing did happen in Congress.
Why did they? That's my question. We know nothing happened. Why did they do that? Why did they submit the agreement to Congress?
Because the Restoration Act provided that it should be submitted.
Well, why did it do that?
I would gather because the Congress thought that they wanted to make sure that the agreement was appropriate. But the reality is that
suppose the agreement had said expressly no OSHA. Would your argument be the same?
It'd be like the Navajo case, it seems to me.
I would argue that there's no language in the Restoration.
Yes, I know that.
That would authorize that kind of an agreement.
I see. So that would be unauthorized because the Restoration Act doesn't have anything to hint at that. Okay,
right. It does exempt the tribe from federal taxation in terms of the transfer of the property. And there are specific provisions in the Restoration Act about that. And we would argue
that's repeated in the management agreement.
Right. And that's in the statute, the Menominee Restoration Act. And we would say that when Congress wants to exempt the tribes from the general federal laws, it knows how to do so. It did it for taxes, but it was silent.
Was the Restoration Act before or after OSHA?
Right after OSHA. It was like 73 or so. Yeah, it was after the OSHA.
Okay.
Do I have?
You have time.
Okay.
Sure.
What I wanted to say is that MTE is not really fighting the Tuscarora rule, but saying that it falls within the exceptions. Except for the restoration and management plans, all the arguments that MTE makes about the exceptions should not be considered by the court because MTE failed to timely make these arguments. For example, with respect to the first exception on intramural matters, MTE raised that before the commission, but it did not raise that argument in its opening brief to this court. It raised it for the first time in this court in its reply brief. And, of course, this...
Does it make any difference? Aren't these pure statutory arguments? Well, what's the significance of the commission?
The significance of the commission...
Is this a Chevron issue or something, or what?
No.
It's just a question of statutory interpretation or interpreting the Tuscarora opinion. Why would it matter whether they made the argument to the commission?
They did make on the first exception. They did. You may be going more to the.
What difference does it make if they think new arguments on appeal?
For example, the commission has
views on statutory interpretation.
The treaties were not mentioned to the commission. Section 11A of the OSHA Act says that. And the Restoration Act wasn't mentioned in its petition for discretionary review.
So you're just essentially saying there's the standard kind of exhaustion requirement.
Right. It says no objection.
Other agencies.
Yeah. Yes. No objection not made before the commission with a petition for discretionary review should be considered by the court absent extraordinary circumstances. There are no extraordinary circumstances here. All these arguments.
What would the commission have to say about these omitted issues?
The commission, through the years, has ruled on these are legal issues, and the commission has ruled on them. And I'm not saying that the commission is an expert on Indian statutes and treaties, but they are lawyers. They are judges. They rule on issues like the courts of appeals do. Mm-hmm. So the on the intramural matters, the Second Circuit has ruled and the Ninth Circuit has ruled that intramural matters do not include commercial operations of the tribes. And then this court in Great Lakes stated that commercial operations, such as lumbering, are covered by federal employment laws. And in so doing, it relied on Warm Springs, which held that the operation of a tribal sawmill is not an intramural matter, and that the OSHA Act did apply to the tribal sawmill. MTE also argues, on the basis of the second exception, that application of the OSHA Act to it would abrogate treaties, the Menominee Restoration Act, and the Restoration and Management Plans. The arguments based upon the treaties and the Restoration Act should be dismissed for procedural reasons, and in any event, these arguments are without merit. MTE never raised the treaties in its answer, its motion for summary judgment, its petition for discretionary review filed with the commission, or its opening brief filed with this court. And as I said in response to your questions, Section 11A of the OSHA Act bars consideration of this new argument. But if the court does consider the treaties, the arguments are without merit. The treaty provisions are of the general sort which this court in Smart and the Ninth Circuit in Warm Springs held did not bar the application of general federal statutes. As MTE notes, the 1854 treaty provides that the Menominees would have a reservation for, quote, for a home to be held as Indian lands are held, unquote. In United States versus 3 Winchester 3030, caliber level action carbines of 504 F2nd 1288, 7th Circuit 1974, this court interpreted that provision not to exempt Menominee Indians from federal firearms laws.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lerner.
Okay, thank you.
Reynolds, does he have any time? We'll give you a minute, though.
In terms of the waiver argument, I think that the whole focus is jurisdiction. All of these issues were well vetted in terms of Menominee history, the Restoration Act, whether it was articulated as the plan of the act. Jurisdiction is the key here. I hope the court will reach that. I think one of the biggest principles in the Great Lakes case is this duty of forbearance when there is a reluctance to derogate Indian rights when the statute is silent. And here the statute, Judge Wood, I think, was passed in 1970, whereas the Indian sort of carve-out provisions of the Clean Water Act happened almost 17 years later. So Congress is getting a little bit better in terms of recognizing Indians as governments, and that's what's missing here. And that's why I think the Tuscarora rule is really not a general rule of applicability, because it's really just focused on private industry,
not government. Mr. Reynolds, you say government. That you welcome OSHA, but you could exclude OSHA, right?
That's right. Because
why do you make this argument that they would welcome it? Is that in the record that the tribe, the MTE, welcomes OSHA?
Yes. In fact, when OSHA came in and made these citations, Judge, they corrected all the violations. They fixed everything and said, thanks for pointing that out. They have a relationship with the federal government. It goes way back, but it's a government-to-government thing as opposed to a government-punishment thing that belongs for private industry but does not belong for tribal governments.
Okay, well, thank you very much.